I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Welcome to Spark My Muse, my friends. Today, before I get started introducing my guest, I want to mention that February is my birthday month, and sort of like a Middle Earth hobbit, I like to give away things on my birthday, not just receive them. And so if you go to facebook.com/sparkmymuse and you like that page and you leave a comment where you see the little part where I'm going to be giving away a little goodie box or goodie basket, you'll get a chance to win. Someone will randomly win this goodie basket I'm going to send out. So go over there and check it out. I would love to give you something if you are one of the lucky winners, if you are the lucky winner. And go over there and check it out. Today's guest is Erika Hayasaki. She teaches workshops in nonfiction writing and classes in digital storytelling at the University of California in Irvine. She is an associate professor and teaches in the literary journalism program. She's a former journalist, most recently for the LA Times, and she's award-winning. She writes on some interesting topics, usually on ones that people consider morbid or unsavory at times. And I thought what she has focused on would be really interesting to feature here, including the more recent fascination with death and death culture. For instance, students have been really interested in taking death class in certain universities, and these death salons have popped up all over the country because we have been so removed from our own mortality that people feel like there need to be forums to talk about what naturally occurs for all of us who are human. We die. So I thought this would be an interesting way to explore this new phenomenon as well as get acquainted with what is going to happen to all of us in a way that is interesting and provokes thought. So I really hope you enjoy the program today. You started off as a reporter, and then now you're teaching. Or tell me a little bit about that transition, or sort of a little bit about your career.
Sure. I was a writer for the LA Times, mm-hmm. As you know, for about 9 years. Mm. And I actually got into journalism very young. I was in high school. And I went into a journalism program at the University of Illinois, and I worked at a lot of, you know, internships throughout college, and I ended up at the LA Times when I was quite young. I was about 21, and stayed there covering education and crime and general news and writing about youth. And then I moved to New York in 2007, I believe, to be a national correspondent, which meant I was responsible for covering 9 different states in the region. It was kind of a huge job. And I also was pulled to do a lot of breaking news all over the country. So I would travel to like Alaska or to Minnesota when there was like a bridge collapse, anytime there was major breaking news. And around that time, especially late, you know, 2009, the future of newspapers was looking pretty grim. Yeah. And especially the LA Times. And, you know, I just didn't know if I was going to have a job forever in print. So I found out about this journalism teaching job at the University of California, Irvine. And at the same time, I started thinking about writing a book. So it all kind of came together at the right time. I just transitioned, and I already had this book that I had been working on in New Jersey with Norma Bow in the death class. Yeah. And so that's how I made the switch.
Yeah, and I kind of can't wait to get into the death class, but I'm gonna get to that in a second. But how did you get involved so early in high school with those types of things? How did that happen so early for you?
That's a good question. I went to high school in Linwood, Washington, which is sort of a suburb of Seattle. It was a public school. It was a okay school. But we had our share of problems and violence and things like that. And so kind of to keep myself out of trouble, I ended up in the school newspaper. And I, got really interested in writing articles because I realized this was a way to sort of communicate with the public. But it was at that time in my life, actually, that the Oklahoma City bombing happened on the same day that my friend was murdered by her boyfriend. And I ended up writing about her murder for the newspaper on the day, in the aftermath of the Oklahoma City bombings, as everybody was sort of tuned into that disaster. We were dealing with our own sort of disaster at home, and it just got me interested in the kinds of stories that we don't hear about as much on the news every day, the people behind them. And so I just stuck with journalism. I majored in that in college and worked for the school newspaper, and I wrote obituaries at the local newspaper to help pay for my tuition. I was going to classes from all day long, and then I would go to the newspaper and write obituaries from like 5 to 10 p.m.
Yeah, that not exactly a typical job for college.
No, it wasn't, but it was a great training ground because I had to learn how to interview family members, and accuracy was very important. And I was able to transition from that into doing actual stories. And I just worked my way up. I just started applying for every internship I possibly could, and I, ended up driving to Florida for a to Tampa, Florida for an internship. I didn't know anybody in Florida. It was like one summer, and I just packed up and drove there and did an internship there. And I did an internship in Seattle at the Seattle Post Intelligencer and worked at like the mall at night. So I just made it ha work. It was everything, trying to get as much experience as I could when I was younger, and then I was able to, luckily go to a place like the LA Times when I was pretty, still very young.
Yeah, you're really scrappy. And and your work is tends to be these darker subjects, and then eventually you write this book on death class, which we'll get to. But I was also, and we'll talk about near death experiences too, which I'm kind of intrigued to get into. But did you have any kind of religious or spiritual context for some of these topics, or like kind of what's your spiritual formation context, or were you just kind of taking it as it came?
I didn't have a religious background growing up. So I don't know if that makes sense, but my father is from Japan, and his family came from a Buddhist Shinto tradition. Actually, it was Buddhist, but he didn't really practice. He kind of went with the motions. And then he went to a school that was like a private school for Shinto religion. But again, he was really very focused on his gymnast. He was a gymnast, and so he did that. And then and so he didn't have a strong religious foundation. And then my mother didn't either. She We just didn't go to church. We didn't go to do those kinds of things. So we didn't talk about it a lot, honestly. I do remember like praying a little bit. Like I remember when I was a kid, my mom would try to pray with me when I was a child. But I just didn't have, and that's, I'm sure that fueled a lot of my questions
The
because
curiosity of
have any explanations given to me ever growing up. And so that was part of my interest.
Well, it's interesting because even though your parents aren't really practicing anything, your the American culture is really saturated with a lot of, there it's kind of, you're swimming in a culture in the United States, it's kind of all over the place, at least it seems that way. And so you're sort of, you're around all kinds of stuff. And so I'm sure, you're it's there's a curiosity there, and you're picking up things here and there, I'm sure. But
yeah.
So yeah, that's a really kind of fascinating perspective, because you're sort of reporting. You know, you're kind of a reporter, objectively reporting on it. You know, it's a fascinating perspective to have, because that's what kind of makes me intrigued by your particular perspective, because you're not really coming at it from, well, here's my angle, and you know, this is my
right.
You know, that's actually, in a sense, a more intriguing perspective then.
I know that it was, I feel like journalism was, it informed a lot of my life. So it was always, you know, figure out the meaning of something, figure this out, get to the bottom of this. And yeah, like I said, religion didn't factor into my upbringing, but the big questions are always there. So why are we here? Yeah. Why do we die? What happens when we die? You know, what is the point of everything? And then of course, when you're a news reporter, you're sort of just thrown into these horrific situations in the aftermath of them often, or talking to people who live through either horrible events or survive and you know, are these, they have these amazing stories to tell. And again, the big questions are still there. Like, and it sort of brings you closer into that experience with different people. So I think I definitely have approached all of these big questions as a, like, trying to be a journalist about it.
Yeah.
You're right.
And so many people have so many different approaches to it, and they're going to gather so many different meanings about either near death experiences or, you know, a death or a loss of a loved one. They're going to really come at it from so many different ways. I'm sure you're sort of pulling all these different things together. So it makes me really, how in the world did you hear about Death Class, and what, how did that whole thing transpire?
So I was in my office in New York one day when I got like a news alert, a Google alert or something like that. I had Google alerts set up for all over, you know, all the various states that I covered, and New Jersey was one of them. And it was a article written by a student about this class on death, and the student was talking about how it was a life-changing experience and it was one of the most popular classes on campus. And I'm always just looking for story ideas and interesting people to profile. And so I just contacted the professor and I went there and started hanging out. And it turned out that this professor, you know, had this very larger-than-life personality. But even beyond that, she took her students into, you know, cemeteries to do lectures, or the coroner's office, or crematoriums, inside a maximum security prison where they would interact with people who had actually killed people. You know, so she had a different sort of philosophy on teaching, which was very much sort of an immersive experience, like much like I like to do as a journalist, is to have an immersive experience. And so I spent some time with her class, and I wrote an article for the LA Times about her class. But then I just kept going back to her class and following it through the semester, and then into a year, and then a year turned into another year, and getting to know some of the students and why they come to a class like this. And the class had like a 3-year waiting list at the time, and it was, you know, it was the most popular class on campus besides like the sex education class. So, you know, and it's just, of course, death and sex, you know, these mysteries. And so the students wanted to know more, and that they ended up in this class, but it became much more than just a class for a lot of them. And so that's how I just got sort of involved and interested in seeing what I could learn as well.
And so from the teacher's perspective, is the point of the class to get you familiar with death as a reality? And I mean, one of the things that I noticed from your work is that, and just from reading, why there sort of seems to be a renewed fascination in death, or maybe there isn't, maybe it's not renewed, but we are really shielded from death, and in ways that weren't always, I guess, as a species. We used to have to care for our sick and our dead. We'd have to prepare the bodies. We'd have to bury the bodies. And that's all taken care of by third parties. And we maybe fear it more now. And is that her purpose? Or what do you think is the gist of the reason for the class? And what do you think draws students in the most? Is it personally fearing death, or maybe they're drawn because they've lost a loved one?
I think they're drawn for a number of reasons. Of course, one of the reasons is the field trips.
Right.
If you have a choice between, you know, sitting through a lecture or going to a prison, you know, a lot of people would choose prison just because who gets that experience every day? So definitely students had heard around campus what the class is all about. That's one thing. But also, yeah, they were coming because they either had fear of death. A lot of them had lost people. People had suffered through their own debilitating diseases like cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, they even some had lost animals, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever it was, they had curiosities and questions and fears, and that's how they ended up in the class. And the professor, Norma Bo, she is this kind of individual who lives her life understanding that death is a reality day to day. You know, it's a part of life. It's not something that she fears.
Because she has a nursing background, or?
Well, yeah, she came from a background that was in nursing and psychology and health. And, you know, she just had sort of this close up view of death as a nurse and as anybody in the medical profession would. And she didn't see it as something that was terrifying, you know. And in fact, she thought that people who had the understanding or came to that kind of understanding about death and looked at it in a different way could, you know, live with death and not be so scared of it as well. Mm. So she brought that into her classroom, that belief system as well.
Yeah, and one of the parts when I was watching, I believe it's the trailer to your book based on the class, is that there's an autopsy. And I don't know if that's something that you experienced too as you were participating in how you participated, but yeah, some of the things are pretty well morbid and grisly, and I was thinking, I don't know if I could handle it. And were some of the students like, wow, I don't know if I can handle it? Were some of them freaked out, and is it too much for some people? How does that get handled?
Yeah, the autopsy is one field trip that they do, and there were students that, you know, left the room or couldn't handle it, or maybe, you know, sometimes there are students who don't even go to that. But so do you mean just like how do they handle it in general? I mean, I think it's
like how does she like prepare you? You're going to see an actual person cut up and or whatever. And
yeah, I think she just she would tell you, and then, you know, you would go. I mean, that didn't get much more.
That's pretty blunt.
For you, like, she would give you a face mask. They give you a face mask so that she would spray, like, a lavender perfume in the face mask so that you didn't have to inhale the scent. She would explain the process of the autopsy before it happened. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of – but you can never really prepare yourself for what it's like to see somebody's, like – you know, head get cut open. That's, you know, but yeah, I mean, that was what I mean by bringing you up close and personal to death. Yeah. She definitely did that as close as you could get.
what was the most difficult part for you, or what was, I mean, is this kind of something for you, is this difficult, or is it now that you've, since being a reporter for a while, or is it like nothing really phases you because you're like pretty tough cookie? Or
I would say that no.
was it tough for you?
I had honestly I'd seen autopsies before as a journalist, so that wasn't like the first time, and it wasn't the last time either. So no, I mean, when you see death up close, it's like it's not life, there's like never a better way to understand that somebody's not there anymore than to see them dead, because even if they look the same, they're not there anymore. When you see that up close, it's just a reminder of that. And it's also a reminder that we all die. We're all going to die. It's just a reality. And sometimes we end up on an autopsy table. And we don't think about these things in our lives, and we don't necessarily want to. But it's a reality.
Yeah, I think one of the surprising things that people seem to say after they took the class, because you would think, maybe at least some people would think, wow, I can't think of a more depressing class to take, is that, oh, I'm gonna die maybe in a couple years, or maybe in, I nobody really knows. And it seemed like the very complete opposite reaction. People seem to say, it was beautiful. I love life more. I'm living every single moment and day to the fullest. And it seemed to give people a different kind of appreciation for what life really is. And I mean, what was the impact on you?
Well, I would have to agree with that. I was, because I had covered so much tragedy as a journalist, when I encountered the class, I was at a point where I think I had a lot of anxiety around death, and fear. I had sort of like almost panic attacks every time I had to like get on a plane, even though I did it all the time. I had covered plane crashes, and seen the aftermath of plane crashes. So it wasn't so far off to me that a plane could crash. And so these things were always invading my mind. And after taking the class and being exposed to all of this, and just making changes in my life, I know I'm never, I don't think fear of death ever goes away completely, and I don't think that anybody ever has all the answers, and I certainly have no desire to die at all right now. I love life. I love my life and the people in it. And so, but I also know that it happens, and so I think that that does give you this sort of appreciation for every day, and trying to get the most out of every day with the people that you love. And so, going through an experience where you're immersed and exposed to death, in the way that's not just, there's different ways that we're exposed to death. There's the way that we're exposed on the kind of constant cycle of the news, or if you're a news reporter, chasing that cycle of news. Which is not necessarily a healthy way to be exposed to death. But then there is the way that you could, like a class where it's not just you go see an autopsy and then you go home and you never talk about it again. You're having these discussions, you're thinking about it intellectually, you're thinking about it personally and philosophically and all of that. And you're discussing that with people who shared that experience with you and a professor and considering readings and psychology and all of that. And so it's a different way to just kind of be like slammed with death one day and you had never really thought about it. You're thinking about it all constantly,
It's a
and
whole
that changes.
process. Yeah, it's like the process of working through it and digesting it and chewing over the concepts and sort of absorbing the whole thing, not just getting slammed with trauma after trauma.
Yeah, exactly. And you can getting slammed with trauma after trauma is not that's not going to be a healthy way. But if you're like working through it, it's like I guess if you were in therapy. But also, there's been actual studies on this, you know, people have done studies on deaf classes even on, because there are deaf classes on other campuses. In fact, there's deaf camp classes all over the United States, and people have surveyed these classes and found that, you know, the classes that just kind of teach straight from the book, they're not doing a lot to alleviate deaf anxiety. But when there are classes that give this sort of exposure to deaf in a closer way, those students' deaf anxieties are lessened after the courses. So they've done comparisons and some of that to also show sort of the differences in how we're exposed to deaf.
Yeah, you know, that kind of brings up an interesting point in terms of people who talk about death and mortality and things in faith traditions too, because even though in faith traditions people are sort of putting death in the context of, well, that person's going to heaven, so they're kind of, you know, they're saying, well, yes, it's death, but they're in heaven now, but they're also discussing it a lot more in groups than maybe people who are just not saying anything and just being fearful, you know. So there's more of maybe the process of talking it out in these different settings that might not happen otherwise if you're in those social situations.
Right. That's...
And so I'm wondering if just because I'm thinking how can people cope with this obvious situation we're all in, that we're all going to die. We all have mortality. That's our reality, and we don't deal with it particularly well, that we have anxieties about it. And, you know, from your research and from your experiences, if you don't have a chance to take a death class, you know, what do you think people should do to think about it in healthier ways?
Well, there are a lot of death social experiences happening now that sort of could be an opportunity to facilitate discussions around death, such as, you know, there's this death cafe movement that's happened all over the world where people get together over like tea and cookies and tea and cake, and they talk about death just, you know. And there's something called death dinners, the same idea. There's a death salon that happens in Los Angeles and elsewhere, where younger people are getting together and having these sort of conferences about death, but not like all academic. It's more different sorts of angles and art and research into death, and then having sort of shows and, you know, open discussions. That's what they're opening up, these discussions to make it less taboo. And so even if you don't have a death class, these events are happening all over the world and gaining a lot of traction and popularity. I mean, if you just Google death cafe or death dinner or death salon, you'll probably find one in your area.
That's amazing.
And then you're connected to a group of people who have the same sort of curiosities and, you know, just want to open up the discussion, because what it is we have had a long history of kind of pushing death out of the way. That's cultural in the U.S. You know, when somebody dies, I mean, it's very frightening, to the idea of thinking of seeing a dead body. But in a lot of cultures, seeing a dead body is part of, you know, the dying process. It's part of, you know, families are involved in getting the body ready for burial. There's a whole alternative burial funeral movement that's happening, which, you know, people, if they're interested, they can research on that. But death has been pushed out of the way, you know, for a long time. You send, you know, the person dies in the hospital, and then they go directly to, you know, a funeral home, and they're embalmed, and then they, you know, it's, you don't ever see all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, because it's something that you're not supposed to see. But there are people who are saying, look, that doesn't have to be scary. You know, it doesn't have to be something that we aren't allowed, a process that we're not allowed in on. Like birth, it's something that we can witness. The dying process, and after somebody's dead, you know, taking part in caring for somebody's body and burying them and doing cleaning or whatever. I mean, I know it sounds extreme for some people, but again, this is the culture. This is the way our culture has sort of conditioned us, is that death is something that we shouldn't be around. And in fact, you know, being around it isn't necessarily going to be so awful for you. In fact, blocking it out sometimes, it seems, can be more detrimental because you're not prepared when something happens and you don't know what to do. And
You know, and I think that just taking part a little bit in the process isn't going to feel like the person just like went on vacation, because I know like my stepdad died of cancer and we went to the memorial and there's a picture of him there, but I don't remember seeing him dead at all. And so it felt like he just decided to go on a vacation, and it was really odd.
Yeah.
And you don't really grieve in the same kind of way. And a friend of mine is a funeral director and he lives near the Amish, and the Amish of course have completely different customs and very simple ways. And they, of course, care for the body in very traditional ways that are, you know, 300 years prior to how we would do it now. And they have a very different grieving process that is much more, well, probably healthier, and they don't have the same sorts of fears of death because they clean the body and it's a very caring and it's a goodbye process.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, we still very much rely on the traditional process in America of the funeral. But like I said, there are a lot of people who are trying different things. And it doesn't even just have to be after death, but being in the presence of a dying person. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who are so scared of that they don't even want to be around their own loved ones when they're dying because it's so scary and hard to accept. But that can be one of the most important moments of your life, you know. And in the book, in Norma Beau, she discusses that, you know, being around like the first death she witnessed and what that was like, and her own mother's death being in witness to that. Even after having a very tortured relationship with her own mother. So there's a closure there that happens. So again, it's about not thinking of this as something that's bad and wrong, you know, more like integrating it into the part of life, our lives.
And trying to make it, not something that we're just going to keep avoiding thinking about and trying to, let's pretend this isn't going to happen. Let's pretend that, you know, I think that maybe just being honest about our fears and is maybe the start of starting to do something about it. And then even if we can't find a death salon or a death cafe, that we could start talking about it to a few friends. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of us have the same questions, and you know, no one's going to be that surprised when you say I don't like being around a dead body. I think everybody's gonna be like, yeah, me too. And then maybe you could even just visit a funeral home together with a few friends and talk to someone about it, you know, that it doesn't have to be an official thing. If it's not a catered salon, death salon, that it could still be a positive thing. And that's a really good point about just starting conversations.
And there's a lot of reading out there. I mean, in the death class, a lot of Norma Beau's writing assignments are in that book. But there's other books, you know, out there that have a lot of insights into this sort of open discussion of death and death movements. I think there's a death reading list. I could send you a link.
Maybe I include that in the show notes. And then if people have, you know, are curious about what they could read as resources and stuff, then it could be included in the show notes. I usually try to include websites and links for people to give them a little more help along the way. And maybe I can wrap it up now and come back and talk to you another time about near-death experiences, because I know that's a little bit of a different category, but I was kind of curious about your research on near-death experiences, and might be nice to save that for maybe another time if you're willing to come back on maybe in a month or two.
Sure.
Because I feel like it's kind of almost like opening up a whole new book. And but yeah, I read about your uncle, the book that you had on Amazon and about your uncle and how you were with him during his death. And it was really, really touching. And I'm going to include a link to that book that you did as well, because it was really lovely. And his near-death experiences that you were trying to get him to get him to talk about, and some of the work you've done there.
Yeah, I did write that I was with him toward his death, toward the end of his life, and a lot of that was also around after I had taken the death class. So I had also a different perspective on death, and I was interested in his experiences, and that I wrote, at that time doing again. Sort of journalistic research into the near-death experience. And I think that as I continue to research that and also memory, which is sort of my next big thing that I'm investigating, I think that will continue to evolve, what that is, what near-death experiences are all about, what's happening in your brain, what happens after you die and all that. So I'm happy to talk about that whenever.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much, Erica. This was really fun.
No problem. Thanks so much for your interest.
Show notes for this episode can be found at sparkmymuse.com. There you'll find details for websites and people and books mentioned in this episode, and sometimes you'll find photos and videos too. Please stop by and check it out.